epic views, waterfall mists, summit sunsets. It's all better outside. And with All Trails, you can discover the best of nature with over 450,000 trails around the world. Download the free app today and find your next adventure.
Possibility means you have a chance.
Passion opens the door to all possibilities.
When I feel like anything's possible, I feel kind of giddy.
I want to be an astronaut,
an artist,
an actress.
To visit another country.
All I need is a backpack and a pair of shoes and I'll find a way.
I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
I've never felt like more things are possible than right now.
In the right shoes, anything's possible.
DSW, countless shoes at brag-worthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
Fun fact, you can't get pregnant every day. You're only fertile for 6 days, ovulation day and the 5 days leading up to it. Natural Cycles is the only birth control app that can pinpoint your fertile window by analyzing your hormone-driven temperature trends. It's more than just a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
He's unpredictable. He's relentless. He's fearless. He's smart. He's a jerk. Oh, man, what a jerk. How would you describe Kirk Minahan?
He's talented.
He's blunt.
He's complicated.
He's the fakest tough guy I know.
He's honest.
A self-proclaimed weenie.
He's angry.
He's actually a good guy.
He's a psycho big mouth prick.
I wish we had more Kirk Minahans.
How would you describe Kirk Minahan?
Combustible.
Unpredictable.
Venomous.
Testy.
Obnoxious.
Selfish.
Polarizing.
Pompous.
Enough about me. Let's get to the show.
It's Kirk Minahan's Enough About Me.
I guess he might not be the biggest football writer in the country anymore. That might be Schefter, I suppose. But Peter King is right there. And as we know, he was at the center of the Deflategate controversy. And he and I went at it hard on a Labor Day. I actually came into work that day. Peter and I went for 15 minutes back and forth. I gave him so much credit for that. You know, you might not like the guy. You might think he's in the tank for Goodell. He hates the Patriots, whatever. He came in and did what almost every other writer, certainly his level, would never do. And we got to Deflategate, which is, of course, inevitable. But first, I wanted to know, why does he keep doing what he's doing? All right, so I was just talking to Ben, who produces this podcast, produces the show that you go on for EI. He said you've got like 7 appearances today, 10 radio appearances or whatever. You do this Monday morning quarterback, this insane, which we get printed out, we talk about every Monday morning in the show. We print it out, it's like 70 pages. You're still doing the TV. I got to ask, and I know you just re-signed, like, why? At what point do you say, it's time to put the feet up, time to call it a day, time to hang out with the dogs, and just say, you know what, I've done enough, and just take a breath?
There's two interesting little things that I would just say about that, Kirk. One is that in order to do something like that at the volume, good or bad, you have to really like it. And you know, I just wrote something this week about the Rams and Titans trade, and I talked to John Robinson, the GM of the Titans, the former Belichick acolyte, and then Les Snead, the GM of the Rams. And stories like that are what really get me excited, because it's, how did this biggest draft trade in recent history happen?
Right.
What exactly, the TikTok of it? And so, I don't know. The other night, I called Snead on Monday night. He was on his way home from the office. And I said, listen, I just got like 3 questions for you. It'll just be very quick. And I looked down at my phone at the end of it, and it's 48 minutes. But it was so interesting, the whole process,
right,
of a real complicated trade. And so that, to make a long story a little bit shorter, that really is what gets me excited. And the one other thing I would say is that I had a very interesting email about, maybe 3 months ago. At the end of this season, I was thinking, I felt like crap at the end of the year. And, you know, it's just not any fun to stay up all night doing something like on Sunday night. So I started to think, I got to finish, these columns got to be shorter. I got to finish it. I don't think anybody reads the whole thing anyway. And so, you know, 11,000 words or 9,500 words, depending on what is going on. And I got a very interesting email from Bill Simmons, I used to be in touch with Bill quite a bit, just haven't for whatever reason in recent years. And he wrote me out of the clear blue sky this email, and he said, you know, I can just tell you that if you write shorter, I think more people would read more of what you do, in essence. And I totally agree with them, and I thank them for it. And so, I don't know, I kind of think that this year I'm gonna still write the column. I'm just going to write it probably a little bit shorter.
I mean, there must be times where, you know, it's 2:45 in the morning or 3:15 in the morning, and you're, you know, in the middle of
you
something.
You curse the day you were born.
And you must just say, why am I still fucking doing this? I've got all the money I'll ever want in my life. You know,
I actually use the F word sometimes at 3:15.
You can say the F word on this, but it's a podcast. You can let it rip. But
you know what? Part of it is, look, I mean, you know, as much as I have become a bit of a punching bag over the years, I also, you know, I sort of view that as kind of the price of doing business at this
like,
level.
It's kind of a it's like getting booed on the road in a way, isn't it?
I don't know.
I think it's a compliment in some. I mean, because listen. You know, I mean, I'll make fun of the haiku sometimes and the beer and the hotels, but I read it every week. There's never a week I don't read it.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. And I mean, look, the bottom line in this whole thing is this: we're coming up on the 20th year. I started this in 1997. So this will be the 20th NFL season I've written this column. And, you know, I just have to try to do something, in my opinion anyway, that'll continue to make people read it in such a crowded landscape. So hopefully if it's shorter and maybe it's not so punchy, you know, the last 2,000 words, maybe it'll be a little better. So we'll see.
What have you done so far with MMQB? I'm saying the actual website itself, not your column. That if you could say two or three things, if you could say, you know what, I screwed that up. If I could do it again, maybe not. You know, I mean, what have you learned? I guess so. Has it been 2 years? Is that right?
It's been 3 years. We've just finished our third year.
What have you learned from it?
What I've learned from it is that it's not being a boss is not all it's cracked up to be, and it's a tremendously fun venture. But honestly, I don't have any idea what the future of the media is. We're making a couple of hires this off season. And I've told the people who we're going to hire, and I've told our staff, look, we're going to do some different stuff this year, and I have no idea if it's going to work or it isn't going to work. We're going to do more video. We're going to do more stuff on social media. We're going to put out these instant reaction 45-second little videos. Is it going to work? Is it going to get us more traffic? Is it going to get more people to pay attention? The one thing I just have no idea what to do about is all the aggregators and all the people who sort of take what you do and write so much of it that most people who then read it don't go back and click on your story. There's a famous story of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette writing the Antoine Randle L story, and the Washington Post website, writing such a huge aggregation, or what, writing such a huge story on it that people read it there instead of clicking back to the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. So, I mean, 3 years ago, did I have any thought that I have to think how to address this? I mean, so those are the kind of things. And traffic and things like that I've never had to worry about. But as far as mistakes go, I've made a million of them, and both on the site and in what I've written. And all you try to do is you try to stand up and say, I blew it, and hopefully people will give you another chance. But as I've always said, after I've made mistakes, some of them involving the Deflategate story, if people don't come back, I totally understand. They expect us to be better than to make big mistakes. I made a couple of big ones, both on this and Ray Rice, and I should pay for them.
Well, we've done. We did that in September. You and I went at it. There's no reason to have that battle all over again. But before we get to some other stuff, so like you broke the story last week on the trade for the first pick. What's interesting now in 2016 is you broke that story, but it feels like that story was yours for about a second and a half, and then it was just everybody else's. Does that make sense?
Like it was true. It happened. I'm dead serious. you know, when I heard about that taxiing on the runway at LaGuardia on the way to Wisconsin to see J.J. Watt,
mm-hmm.
I figured I had maybe 5 or 6 minutes to find out whether indeed it was true, because you can't put something like that up and be wrong. If you are,
right, right.
That's just a big, fat melon sitting out there for people to punch at you for the next 30 years. But, so anyway, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that the Titans actually put their release up about the trade about 90 seconds after I said that Tennessee,
I think that's right,
the
yeah.
first pick of the draft to the Rams. And so, but that's just the way the world is. It is the Wild West, but it's okay. Information is king, and people want to have it.
But there must have been some, so back in, you know, 87 or whatever, if you're on the Giants beat, I'm guessing there must have been a story that you broke that you had for a day or two. And now today that seems impossible.
The two greatest ones I remember about that is I was working for Newsday in the 80s, and Lawrence Taylor was going to get suspended on Monday for 4 weeks for drugs. And it was before the first game of the year. And I found out about it about 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Sunday. And I had it cold. So there was no anything then. There was no, there was radio, but I believe WFAN was about 5 days old then. You know, it was brand, you know, sports talk radio was new. So I was just sitting there praying, hoping that nobody in the next 18 hours, you know, before Newsday hit the sidewalks, in New York on Monday, I was just hoping that nobody would get it, and nobody did get it. But the most amazing one was in 1996, when Brett Favre was about to go into rehab for Vicodin addiction. His golf tournament was going to happen starting later that week in Gulfport, Mississippi. And Brett Favre was not a megastar yet. He just had won his first MVP, but he wasn't Brett Favre in all caps yet. And mm-hmm. So what I'll never forget is he called me, and he was calling everybody who was going to the golf tournament. There was like 90 people going to this golf tournament. And he called everyone individually and just said, I hope you'll still come because, we've got all these charities, you know, waiting for these donations, and so I hope you come. So anyway, and I said, hey, can I ask you a couple of questions while I'm on the phone? And so I asked him a couple of questions, and there he told me the whole story of how he got hooked on Vicodin and everything. So that was on a Wednesday, and there were no outlets of any kind. Our website didn't exist yet, nothing. And so for 8 days, I held that interview before people got it in their mailboxes the following Wednesday.
Yeah,
impossible. The thought of that now is just totally, totally ridiculous.
How many years were you at Newsday? What were your years there?
85 to 89.
What was your relationship like with Belichick? I know what it's like with Parcells. I've heard you talk about that. What was your relationship?
I had a great relationship with Belichick. He was not a... He was exactly the same way he is now. And he was... The thing about Bill that I think people kind of misunderstand, he's a quiet, really, really smart guy. I mean, he's just not made for this spotlight, you know? I mean, he's not made for... He would have been great in the 40s and 50s when there was hardly any media. But you know what? Paul Brown was a lot like Bill Belichick. My first training camp ever that I covered the NFL was 1984, covering the Bengals. And Paul Brown was the owner of the Bengals. And in those days, I'm talking every day was a two-a-day practice, 9 to 11 in the morning, 3 to 5 in the afternoon. And Paul Brown just stood out there baking in the Wilmington, Ohio sun. And I stood with him almost every day as he sort of taught me football. And I would say, why are you doing this, blah, blah, blah. And one day, I made the mistake. I said to him, how do you do this every day? I mean, I'm dying out here. You know, it's 90 degrees. It's humid. This was when people didn't really understand that doing that twice a day was not such a great idea for mm-hmm. athletes. But Paul Brown was incensed. It was the only time I ever really saw him get mad. He said, young man, this is our lifeblood. And he was like huffed and puffed, and he was very upset. He how can anybody not love this? And it's just, I mean, it's so, I think it's so apt that Belichick really idolizes Paul Brown, because he should. They're so incredibly similar. Quiet guys, way ahead of their time, smartest guy in the room, immensely criticized in their own era, you know, by, in my opinion, a lot of people who were jealous of him.
What's your relationship like with Belichick today?
I haven't talked to him since 2007. I haven't talked to him since Spygate happened. And
does he perceive that you did something or think?
Yeah, I think he perceives that I jumped on him too hard, and that I was, you know, there was one day on EEI, I've never asked anybody what it was over. He just stopped talking to me. But there was one day on EEI where I got into it a little bit with Michael Holly about, about the whole, the relative seriousness of the crime. And again, I don't even know what I said, but I said adamantly, look, it's, you know, the Patriots were warned about this and they kept doing it. I don't know what's so difficult. They should get penalized for it and all that. But, I mean, look, I don't anticipate. I have no idea if I'll ever talk to him again.
Have you tried? I mean, have you made attempts?
Yeah, I've tried a couple of times, not seriously or anything like that. And I'll probably make an effort or two, at some point in the next few years. But, you know, it's one of those things, too, Kirk, honestly, that it's not the end of the world. It's, you know, I can still write what I want and, you know, as much or as little as I want. It's funny, the people who, people kind of look at your birth certificate. I was born in Springfield, Massachusetts, and they believe then that if you're born in Springfield, Massachusetts, then you love all things New England. When I grew up, in Enfield, Connecticut. When I grew up, in the 60s and early 70s, you know, before going off to college, the Patriots were like nothing. The big team in Northern Connecticut, was the Giants.
Giants, sure, yeah.
And so at that time, you know, I was a big Celtics fan, I was a Giants fan, and I was a Red Sox fan. And we weren't a very big hockey family until the Whalers came to Connecticut, and we got into that. But and so everybody is going to say that, okay, you're born in New England, you're a New England guy, and there's nothing really you can do about that. If I write a lot about a few weeks ago after Manning retired, I had Brady talking about Manning, on the day that. Mm-hmm. The day after he gets, he hears that Manning is retiring. And it was a pretty good get. And all I got in my comments that day was, oh, of course, Manning retires, so you go back and talk to Brady. Because he's Magic Johnson to Larry Bird, or vice versa. So why wouldn't you want to talk to Brady? But that's probably unavoidable.
It's been a few months now. I went at it a little bit with Klemko. He wouldn't come on, which is okay. That's his right. He wouldn't come on with me, John, and Jerry. Wouldn't come on here. You do, which I give you credit for all the time. We always do in the show. You know, we disagree. You'll come on. You'll fight it out, which I like. I've read the Klemko piece three or four times, and it still doesn't seem right to me. It does have the whiff of some victim blaming.
Well,
that's
certainly the way that the trainer feels about the story, I'm sure.
Well, let me ask this. Let me ask you. So you did a long did a good job responding to it on Monday Morning Quarterback the week after, right? Or did you have, I forget, did you addressed it, right? Klemko didn't, right?
Yeah, well, we both addressed it. But I think, look, here's what happened at the beginning of this story, okay? I told Klemko, who's really an intrepid reporter, and I told him, listen, I just want you to go and find the people who were there that day. I want you to do everything that you can to find everybody who you can and talk to the people who were there that day. So He's actually one night he calls me after standing on the porch with one of the guys who was in the trainer's room that day. It was the cross country runner, and so Klemko talked to him at great length on the porch that day, that night, but the guy wouldn't talk. You know, he lived in Mississippi, and he you know, his whole point, I guess, was that this can't help me move on with my life, so I'm just not going to say anything about it. And so that was okay. And so I fully, totally, absolutely, I got everybody's anger and venom when conveniently Peyton Manning's former roommate comes out of the woodwork after not talking for 19 years about this, and we find him. I understand it. I was saying, how did this happen? How? So, you know, Ari Fleischer, who was Manning's PR guy, and this guy, basically, we had a decision to make. You know, do we say that this guy, point out who he is, and how it's kind of a mystery that he hasn't surfaced at this point, but here he is, and here's what he said happened, and here's his story. And we had a decision to make. I knew the moment that they pressed the button and put this story out that we would get absolutely positively vilified for this story. And there was just, I mean, we all said, are we going to do it or are we going to swallow this and just let this story go? And we decided that we were going to do it.
Yeah, the problem
totally
is...
totally understand
the problem is,
you know, the criticism.
It just seems like it's told from a Manning point of view. You know, obviously there was cooperation from Archie and Fleischer and Peyton and not right.
I don't think he ever talked to Archie, if I'm not... If
I think
I'm
he
not
did. Mistaken. I think he said he was at Archie's house. That's where the messages were played for him, right? Those phone messages.
I'd have to look back at the story. I don't think he talked to Archie. He might have. I don't know. I just don't remember now. But, you know, he did hear the messages. And look, I think one of the things that has gotten a little bit overlooked is the fact that this woman who made these charges has just had a slew of people who have come out over the last few years and who basically said, like the newspaper in Knoxville, who basically impugned her character, and you know, so we. I mean, honestly, we kept most of that out of this story. We put some in it, but we kept most of it out of the story. And so it's an ugly story. I don't know what happened. I feel like there's enough doubt on both sides that something happened that may have been more serious than is generally perceived. But the one point I would say, Kirk, in all this is that there was an investigator for the university, a woman, who you know, no longer works at the University of Tennessee, but she was as adamant as she could be that she did not see any crime that was sexual in nature, and she basically cleared Peyton Manning. And so I think there are some of these things that have gotten a little bit short shrift, but I get it. This is a very controversial thing, and it also definitely has the whiff of Manning protectionism. I get it, but all we tried to do in that case right there is present the facts, and you know, we think we did it right. We were very careful, but not everybody is going to agree that we did it right.
You know, I asked this. I've had Ryan on here. I've had Shaughnessy on here. Jackie McMullen was here a couple of weeks ago. I think that's all the Globies I've had on. And each time I have him on, I ask him a question. Do you think in your lifetime there'll be a time they stop physically printing the Boston Globe? And each of them said yes. So I've asked you, do you think there's going to be a time in our life where they're not printing physically Sports Illustrated anymore?
Yeah, I think so. I keep wondering about the papers, the newspapers that are in massive financial trouble, and how much longer will we hold them in our hands? And you see major metropolitan papers, the New Orleans Times-Picayune, Right. They don't print a paper every day anymore. So that's what, I don't know what's going to happen in the next 3, 5, 7, 8 years, but I could see a time 15 years from now where they don't print Sports Illustrated, where it exists, but it only exists in your hand on a tablet.
You know, the thing about Sports Illustrated that is different is still even, and I subscribe to it, you'll get a story that you may not have seen, you'll have in your hands, and it's still sometimes 6, 8 pages long that's not necessarily time-sensitive.
That is what SI has to be right now. They've got to be different. I remember last year, one of the stories I really, really loved was a story that Greg Bedard wrote about the Houston
Texans. Yeah.
And, I mean, you know, it was brilliant. That is what Sports Illustrated has to be. That's what I think every print product has to be right now. It has to be something that, you know, even a newspaper, you know, if you're the New York Times, you better be able to write something that the next night at 7:30 is still going to be good when people pick it up. And I think that Sports Illustrated, still, you're still working so that when you finish writing it, people aren't going to read it for at least 3 or 4 days. So it's going against the grain. And I definitely still think there's a place for it. It has to be great stories now. It can't just be what happened in this game on Sunday.
You know, it's funny, I tweeted out that you were coming on today about a half hour before we were, maybe 45 minutes before we were doing this. And I understand it's Boston, you know, it's almost my entire Twitter base, but it is still, you know, a year and a half later, 90% deflategate, in the tank for Goodell, you know, fuck him, mm-hmm. deflategate. You must still see, I'm guessing, a lot of that, no?
Yeah, I see an awful lot of it, and it's almost like there's a Mason-Dixon line kind of around New Haven, you know?
Right.
It's six states against 44. 44 don't care.
Right.
They've moved on. Six will never move on. And, you know, I mean, I don't blame them because, you know, when you look back at that time in history, and you look back at that story, at least in my opinion, you know, it's funny. I saw Dan Shaughnessy in Cleveland. I went out for the Red Sox opener, and my brother-in-law and I went out and watched the game. And so we met. We had a beer one night after, on the night of the rainout. You know, with Shaughnessy, and we saw Pete Abraham and Alex Speer too. But we were talking about this story and about how, I mean, it never dies. It just absolutely never dies. And one of the points I made is that, hey, look, I'm no one to talk about this because I'm one of the people who messed this thing up to begin with. But, you know, to me, I understand more probable than not is the way the NFL legally has a right now, you know, to do what it wants in terms of discipline. And there is some circumstantial evidence in this case that points at wrongdoing. But my whole thing after I read the Wells report, and I read it a second time, is, you know, it's circumstantial evidence. You could look at that and read the report and say, I believe 62% that the Patriots did something wrong. But for the best quarterback of all time, I'd certainly want it to be a lot closer to be 100% to impugn his character for the next 3 decades.
Do you think you were told the 11 of 12 by somebody who was trying to screw over the Patriots?
No. In no way. I mean, All I was doing in this particular case was in the frenzy of the initial aftermath of the story. You know, there were people inside the league office who were at and outside the league office who also are very familiar with everything that goes on inside, who were convinced that that they had cheated, you know, absolutely convinced. But then, you know, what really, I think what, and I wrote this, I don't know, whatever, February or early March or some point, that the Patriots, Goodell should give the Patriots their pick
right.
back. And, you know, I may not have had that opinion if the league did exactly what it should have done in this case. And what the league should have done in this case is take the 2015 season to do what it has never done before. Take measurements of footballs before every game and at halftime of every game and see if it is indeed plausible that an average of 1.2 pounds per square inch would come out of footballs when the temperature is, let's say, in the 40s or 50s, and it's a very humid day, and maybe it's raining, maybe it's wet, whatever. And in my opinion, after the league, I don't know whether they did it or not. It's the all-time tight-lipped thing inside the league, what exactly they did this year. But when they didn't do that this year, I just said, hey, they don't want to know. They don't want to know. Because if they find out that they were indeed wrong, then all of a sudden the Wells Report isn't worth the paper it's printed on.
Are you a different reporter than you were last? Have you learned? Have you learned things from that follow-up that you wouldn't do
what
now?
What I learned, I don't think I'm a revolutionarily different.
No, I know, but just but you know, if you had the same situation like right now, say a similar situation, would you maybe handle it differently?
I've had one situation. I ended up not writing something that I still believe to this day is true.
Would you have written that 4 years ago?
I may have, because the person who told me, I trust implicitly, and I don't think that this person is wrong. But I kept asking around, and I could not find another person to tell me whether this was true. And I said, I'm not doing it. And so, look, I in that way, I am a little bit different. I'm probably less trusting of, you know, of some people who, and look, you know, a lot of people have said, well, did you go back to them and rake them over the coals because they screwed you up? And I said, no, because, I mean, I definitely talked to them about it. But the reason that I haven't is that I believe they were telling me what they firmly believed at the time was true. And, you know, as it turns out, especially when the true measure of the footballs came out, it's scientifically very possible that 1.2 pounds per square inch on each football in weather like that could have escaped the footballs in the span of 2 hours or 2 hours and 15 minutes.
I read this story that you had about you a couple of weeks ago when you re-signed. Were you actually considering about following around the political campaign, or was that just sort of, you know, pie in the sky?
No, I've always, ever since I read Boys on the Bus, you know, 100 years ago.
Timothy Krause, right?
That would be a tremendously fun thing to do. But realistically, you know, when the 2020 campaign happens, or when it starts, I'll be 61 years old. Am I going to want to do that? I think it's much more realistic that I might cover a baseball season. I've always sort of wanted to do that. I think the highs and lows and the just constant thing. The first job I ever had in sports writing was at the Cincinnati Inquirer, where I was, one of my jobs was I was backup beat writer on the Cincinnati Reds in the waning days of the Big Red Machine. And I thought the four guys who, the two papers in Dayton, two papers in Cincinnati, four of the most recent beat guys were all divorced. And I just said, this is no life for me. And that's one of the reasons why I never really pursued baseball. But I think one day, just for 1 year, it would be a really fun book to do, sort of like, you know, maybe following around not the best team and not the worst team, just the Minnesota Twins or something like that, just to see what, you know, what an 8 month baseball season is like.
So you get the sense that,
I could see myself doing that one day before I leave.
Do you get the sense that this is the last contract you'll sign with SI?
I don't know the answer to that. I really don't know. I really enjoy what I'm doing now, but I don't think that I want to do it at this level for very much longer. And it isn't that I don't enjoy it. I really enjoy it. But, you know, when you run something, too, it's sort of a different thing. You're not only doing what you've always done and the same sort of content and volume that you've always done, but now you've got a couple of meetings a week to talk about things you've never in your life worried about once. Hey, who are we hiring? How much are we paying them? What is the budget? Should we go here? Should we go there? You're kind of a little bit a ruler over people's lives, and I've never had to worry about anybody's lives other than mine and my family.
Is SI looking at MMQB as a success? Have they been cutting back? Have they been spending more money? Or they?
No, we're hiring like 2.5 more people this year. We're also going to hire a part-time editor. But we're hiring 2 more people. We're just going to try to be a little bit more digital conscious, a little bit more video prone. I think they view it as a success, but, you know, we just had our meeting we had a dinner with advertisers this week. We had a dinner with about 50 or so people in New York, and you just try to convince them, here's why you should spend your money with us. And that's something that obviously in my life I've never had to worry about, but I don't mind it. I mean, we in some way should have to sing for our supper. It was, I'm not saying too easy for too long, but I mean, you know, people are getting their content in so many different ways these days that it's up to us to make the content palatable and enjoyable. And that's sort of what I spend a lot of time thinking about now.
Well, I know you got about 10 more hits to go with the draft coming up. Just want to say I appreciate you coming on today. I really appreciate you coming on Labor Day and letting me and you have a battle. We've had a million guys back out, and you're one of the, you know, biggest football writers in the country. You came on that day, and we went back and forth. And I'm telling you, you know, as you know, not a lot of people would do that. So I definitely appreciate that, and you coming on today.
No problem, Kirk. Wish you all the best.
All right, you too, Peter. Thanks a lot.
Take care. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Enough About Me with Kirk Minahan. If you want more great podcasts, it's pretty easy. You can go to the WEEI mobile app. You can go to Stitcher. You can go to iTunes. You can look up Enough About Me with Kirk Minahan. You can find the ones with Sean McDonough, Bob Ryan, Dan Shaughnessy, David Portnoy. There'll be more. And what you can do when you like them, you write a review. That'll help us out a lot. You give us a rating. We can help you. You can help us. Get that done. Do it right now.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable 6-blade shaves, swift rinse and 4 blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
game day, or any day. Your fit says it all. Hit up MLBShop.com for the latest jerseys, caps, hoodies, and accessories to keep you in the game all year long. Rep your team, rep your city, rep yourself. Gear up and game on at MLBShop.com, the official online shop of Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.